You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
On the 17th of October, the Green Party will be holding a special general meeting to discuss whether or not to use the waka-jumping legislation to oust former MP Darlene Tanna from Parliament, after a party-led investigation found that Tanna had been complicit in incidents of migrant worker exploitation at her husband's business. The announcement comes a week after Justice David Johnstone ruled out a High Court bid by Tanna, attempting to call off a previous meeting by the Greens and alleging that her eviction from the party, as well as investigation into her allegations, were not unlawful. For our weekly catch-up, I spoke to the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March about the upcoming special general meeting and the party's current standpoint on using the waka-jumping legislation to evict Darlene Tanna from Parliament. We also had a korero about Minister of Finance Nicola Willis clamping down on work-from-home arrangements in the public sector, as well as Minister for Social Development Luis Upston rejecting suggestions for a $3 billion investment to fix child poverty. So firstly, I'd like to ask you about your reaction to Justice Johnstone's verdict rejecting Darlene's High Court bid and saying the investigation was neither unfair and that she hadn't been unlawfully pressured to leave the Greens.
Oh, look, well, we welcome the decision by the judge. It affirms the fact that, as we've said, we've been moving through this process with our values at the core, and that ultimately this could have all been avoided if Darlene Tanna had taken accountability for failing to be upfront with our co-leaders in relationship to really serious allegations of migrant exploitation.
You and Chloe have both called on Darlene to resign as an MP and leave Parliament. Do you expect other Green MPs to echo those same sentiments at the special general meeting?
The comments from myself and Chloe are backed up by our whole of caucus. We came out with those comments because we had the backing of all of our MPs.
Similar to the High Court bid Darlene made last week, do you think that Darlene Tanna may try to challenge the possibility of the waka-jumping legislation being used or any other potential outcomes from the upcoming meeting?
Look, if I could read Darlene's mind, we wouldn't be here. So that's probably a question for Darlene, but we're moving ahead with the special general meeting because we strongly believe that we're in good stead to go ahead with the meeting, and our members who have done a lot of work to get us to this point deserve to be able to seek closure from this process.
The Greens have historically opposed using the waka-jumping legislation. So have the recent developments changed the party's view on the practice, or is this just an extraordinary situation?
If you talk to many of the people, and particularly the former MPs who were involved in and present at the time of those comments, what they have acknowledged is that this is an extraordinary situation and not so much in line with the concerns that we've had of the party hopping legislation, which is twofold. One of them is that power could be concentrated a lot in the MPs to make these decisions. What we've done is take this decision to the whole of the membership so that it is not just a decision by the MPs. And the second thing is that what we want to avoid is MPs being kicked out for a matter of principle. This isn't a matter of principle. This is someone who failed to be upfront in relationship to extremely serious allegations of migrant exploitation, which cut to the core of our values.
Would the Greens consider using the waka-jumping legislation again in the future if a similar situation arose?
I am sure the party will be having a lot of conversations following this process around the use of the legislation, so I expect us to have robust conversations to get to a place where we either decide that this was a sort of extraordinary situation or whether we need to set out enduring processes in relationship to its use.
Lastly, how disruptive have the investigation and High Court proceedings been for the Greens?
Oh, look, I mean, we'll be the first ones to say that, of course. This has been an extremely hard year for us, not just with this court case, with the passing of Fanaa Fesu Collins and with Marama having cancer. But at the same time, I think our MPs have been punching above our weight, holding the government to account on things like child poverty, on issues such as climate, on the lack of funding to Oranga Tamariki farmland services, and cuts to public service. So the work continues despite a challenging year.
All right, moving on to the next topic. Just yesterday, Public Service Minister Nicola Willis announced that she had instructed department leaders in the public sector to tighten up on working from home arrangements, saying that work from home arrangements should only be by agreement and that departments needed to start regularly reporting on the number and nature of work from home agreements they had in place. What's the Green Party's take on this announcement?
Oh, look, this is a gimmick government that is actually not serious about supporting workers or even boosting productivity. On the one hand, they claim that this will support productivity, and then on the hand, they're making the argument that this is about supporting businesses and the CBD. The reality is that this is just another attack on workers, and particularly the public sector, who are already feeling the burden of cuts and of being undermined by this government. The public sector, who many of them provide essential services in health and education and help devise policies that protect our people from diseases and from, damaging extreme weather events.
Do you think that in-office arrangements have any impact on productivity?
So I think what we have heard from research and from workers is that flexible working arrangements work best, whether that's hybrid model or, allowing people to actually have an arrangement that better suits their living arrangements. I think particularly when we look at the gender pay gap and for people who have got caregiving responsibilities, hybrid arrangements support people who have caregiving arrangements and allow them to continue participating in the workplace while meeting other responsibilities, which in and of itself support productivity, but also participation in the workplace. Effectively, what the government is doing is preventing many people from properly being able to participate in the workplace by forcing them to be on site for jobs that actually can be worked in a more hybrid model where, some of those days are from home and some of them at the office.
So what kind of an impact do you think reduced work from home arrangements will actually have for those working in the public sector?
Well, it will increase the cost of living. On the one hand, you're expecting people to spend money to commute to the workplaces. Secondly, what it also does is it takes time productivity away from those workers because they're also spending potentially an hour a day, some of them potentially 2 hours a day commuting to work. And ultimately, that lowers the morale of workers. It lowers their ability to have disposable income. And that simply cannot be good for those workplaces either. I think, again, like the model that we've had that allows for a hybrid and more flexible arrangements as a default is the way of the future. And Nicola Willis just wants to take us back to the mid-20th century.
So why do you think Nicola Willis might be trying to clamp down on work-from-home arrangements?
This government just simply does not care about workers' rights. They have an antiquated notion around how workplaces operate, and they have a complete disregard for the public sector. We can see that by the thousands of cuts to frontline services as well. And this is just an ideological push from this government that absolutely makes no sense. Cruelty is the point.
All right, moving on to the last topic. Minister for Child Poverty Reduction, Louise Upston, recently announced that she had rejected advice provided by officials, saying that a $3 billion annual investment would be needed to reach New Zealand's child poverty reduction target, and that the coalition would focus more on economic growth and getting families into work as a way to reduce child poverty. What's your reaction and take on this?
Oh, I mean, this is a government that simply does not care about reducing child poverty. Many of the policies that they've introduced directly increase child poverty. They have been warned by their own officials that, for example, cutting benefit increases will result in more people in poverty. And the reality is that no government has ever achieved 0% unemployment because unemployment is embedded into our economic system. And so Louise Upston simply is condemning more children into poverty because not only did she refuse to champion investment in lifting incomes to reduce child poverty, she has literally lowered child poverty targets. And at the same time, the government is spending a very similar amount on tax cuts that will benefit landlords and high-income earners rather than those living in poverty.
Louise Upston has criticized the child poverty reduction strategy under the previous Labour government, which she says not only missed its target, but made families across Aotearoa dependent on welfare. Do you think this is a fair assessment for her to make?
We've been really critical about Labour's lack of ambition when it comes to addressing child poverty. But it does not mean that then that gives Louise Upston a free pass to make things worse. I mean, she's weakening those child poverty targets. And what this all shows is that child poverty is a political choice. It's a choice to not invest in lifting the incomes of the families who have children living in poverty. It's a choice to not boost working for families and extend that to beneficiaries to a degree that allows them to not live in poverty. And at the same time, they're telling us that investing $3 billion is unrealistic and unachievable, and then they're investing that very same amount in tax cuts for landlords. Louis Sobson is full of nonsense, and it just doesn't add up to the facts that they can actually make this investment and they could actually address child poverty if they chose to do so.
Lastly, can you tell us about the Greens' strategy for reducing child poverty in Aotearoa?
So last election, we went out with an Ending Poverty Together plan that was fully costed. It relied on us doing tax reform and taxing the wealthy few. But what it would have done is would have transformed our income support system to make sure that no family lives in poverty, so that's boosting incomes. It also would have changed how working for families work to enable families to better transition out of work into part-time and eventually full-time work while having a higher income than they do right now. So this is actually one of the ways Louis Sobson could better support families into employment by fixing work and income. We've got a whole plan that is fully costed, and the government is more than able to borrow it if they chose to.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.